Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
And I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And we are on the 14th of April.
Yes, happy Valentine's Day.
tax day tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, original tax day.
Yeah, happy original tax day.
Yep. It's been postponed. So what's happening in your neck of the woods? Anything exciting? Are you getting tired of the 4, 5, 8 walls of your house?
I got a big yard. I just got a new side smoker barbecue pit.
Oh, like which brand? Is it a brand or?
It's a Char Grill.
Oh.
Which I think is the best brand, period. I've used their products for years and years, different ones that they make. But they came up, they developed a nice Texas smoker with a side burner. And it's a pretty nice looking piece of gear.
So is that, what do you put in there? Do you put chunks? Do you put, it's not pellets.
Is it? Oh, God, no.
Chips?
I understand the pellet idea and the way it works, but what happens when the pellet guys decide to go out of business?
Well, not only that, I heard they get stuck a lot.
They will. I can just throw a chunk of wood in there, charcoal, mesquite charcoal, briquettes, it doesn't matter.
Mm. What are you going to make for your first go-round?
Pellets I can't do because they'd fall through the grates. What am I going to do for what?
Your first?
I don't know. Probably some pork thing, maybe I saw a good recipe for pork belly.
Oh,
big slab of pork belly.
Some of the recipes for pork belly call for it to be boiled first. It seemingly gets the skin a little bit kind of tougher but crunchier when you actually end up smoking it.
Well, I've been looking at a lot of things on YouTube for some of these offbeat because we bought a pig recently, and
a live pig. Like a walking pig and talking pig or a pig that's in the freezer?
I got to figure out how to do some of these things correctly.
Hmm. But wait, you didn't answer the question because I may not have heard you. Is it a live pig or a dead pig?
No, that just what the recipe I've seen that I like the best is this fat guy who looks like he knows what he's doing.
Well,
he's got the right accent and he's fat.
Uh-huh.
And he loves pork and he shows how to do a pork. It takes about 14 hours.
Well, it's going to be high time to get pork because we have the Smithfield factory, which supplies 50% of the pork products around the world, or around the country maybe, going into full shutdown mode due to an outbreak of COVID-19 on the premises.
I heard that. We buy off the hoof, so it's not like it's going to affect us.
Ah, off the hoof. I like it. All right, let me tell you what we're going to be talking about. First, market staging a great comeback. We see a 50% plus retracement from the lows. Just like that chart. Started seeing some selling again on Monday. Maybe there was too much too fast, but Tuesday came around. Turn around Tuesday once again. And it started moving a bit higher. There's some new GDP and unemployment projections from JP Morgan that we're going to talk about. And analysts calling the bottom, kind of lining up to be saying that, the bottom's in. We're done. Kind of, they've changed their tune. Have you heard them lately?
I haven't really been keeping up.
Basically, what we have is a we're going to retest the bottoms to, the bottom is in. That's where we are now. We're in bottom is in territory. So there you go. Crude oil is definitely.
If they're right, that's great, but it's.
Yep. It's highly improbable. It's
doubtful. Highly improbable is the way I'd see it.
I mean, I get how there is momentum and I understand that you want to be with the trend. I get all of that. It's just very hard to come up with any reasonable understanding of why the market, first of all, is at these levels, which make no sense in the world, considering all the fundamentals, not only the economic numbers, but what companies are telling us. Secondly, if we're going to go through the greatest recession, the deepest recession since the 30s, and even if it is temporary, recessions are always temporary. That's the big, right?
Yeah, that's the point.
But they're all talking about this, that, you know what? The bottom line is that there's going to be some real pain in the economics, not only here, but around the world. And it's not, it's the other thing is it's not only segmented to the United States. It's around the world. So, you know,
we may be the strongest economy of the group.
We may be, but we're going to have the highest unemployment level. So it looks like at this point, I mean, we're talking big numbers. Man, my cough. Thank God for the cough switch because I'm coughing like crazy tonight. I don't know. At nighttime, I start coughing. Anyway.
So some of these coughs you get are lingering.
Lingering is 7 weeks. I got it on a Tuesday night. I remember having a little bit of a kind of a weird throat one Tuesday night. And then that was 7 weeks ago. I've been counting.
Yeah. Mm.
Crude oil remains the big story right now. We saw a historic cut by OPEC that cut 10 million barrels per day. The problem was, we have a 20 million barrel per day surplus right now. So while everybody was applauding the idea that, hey, that's great news. Yes, go for it, OPEC, OPEC Plus. You're going to cut it, and that's great, and give a little bit of leniency to Mexico because they were all pissed off. And, oh, that's great. So on Sunday night, of course, this happens over the weekend. It always has to happen over the weekend. Markets open up in terms of the futures, and oil's up somewhere about 7 or 8% for just a split second. Then it starts to roll a little bit. By the end of the day today, I think it's right about $20 right now. So
$20.55, yep. As a matter of fact.
Yep. So that's down about 8% today.
Yeah. Sorry for anyone who jumped in.
I got a lot of people that, you know, are really, you know, rooting for oil. But you have to wonder really what the outlook is long term for this because of the excess capacity that we have that we've been building. And then the continued slowdown of the economies around the world that will last for some time. This is not a one-day wonder what's going on right now. So, but we did see a big rebound. I mean, when we started talking about this whole deep situation, the VIX was close to about 90, is now sub 40. Markets were down like 34, 35% at their low. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is down 16%. The S&P is down 13%. And listen to this. The NASDAQ is down 6% for the year. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, why is this? Explain.
So the only thing that I could see right now is that the big names, once again, are garnering a lot of the interest where they have good balance sheets, where they have good outlooks. So you look at the Apples and, I mean, Amazon hit an all-time high today. Netflix is close to a high. You look at Microsoft, I think it was up 5 or 6% today. It was like up to $173, $174 again today. Google is up. So all these companies that are not your restaurants, right? Not your leisure related, not your travel related, although they have some things for searches and all that, but all these companies that really are essentially not so touched by the virus directly. However, there could be some significant impact on their bottom line. Microsoft. They sell seats, right? They sell their products by the headcount. That's how they have it now. The install base of Windows is based on headcount. You know, your Microsoft 365 subscription is right by headcount. So if you have layoffs, you have to wonder when is it going to come home to roost that Microsoft, even though they have other products like Skype and Teams and things like that that are freebies but add-ons to their base product. You know, how long is this love affair with Microsoft going to go? And what about if companies stop advertising as much, lower their budgets for advertising and for pay-for-clicks, Google has a problem. Netflix, you know, maybe people will drop it. Maybe they won't. But
seems unlikely.
It seems very unlikely, especially if you're cooped up.
But they are under a lot of pressure because you have a flat fee and then you have a potential for infinite number of views, near infinite. Because people are home, so instead of watching Netflix movie every couple of days or maybe once a week on Saturdays, now they're just hogging the Netflix line. They're watching Netflix, and they're just, and it's got to be a burden on Netflix. It's costing them.
I would think so. I would think it's a really big burden, and you know, from the bandwidth.
Yeah, the bandwidth's got to be out of control. They've been throttling it a bit.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, so you have those companies that are just saying, you know, well, maybe these are the safe plays. These are the plays that really did well last time around. So let's keep throwing money out of them. And that just raises the NASDAQ up. And the NASDAQ really has no exposure to a lot of the various companies that are the worst hit by this, that the lockdown is going to hit. You know, the technology companies are, nobody's going, you don't have to visit Microsoft to go in their offices. You know, it's, you can do it from your house.
Yeah, Microsoft, there's a lot of companies, tech companies in particular, that can that really benefit from the work at home thing because they can do it.
Right.
They shouldn't even be in the office, although they like to be in the office. But Microsoft, Google, any of the tech companies, most of the time, unless you're doing something where you have to, I don't know why you'd have to be in the office for any job at any of these companies.
I don't know either.
Especially collaborative work, maybe on some code, perhaps. But you can do that without being in the office.
How great of a training ground is this, right? This is kind of training by fire for this whole work at home. It's not like you have to say to your employees, hey, you know what? We're going to take 2 weeks for this division. We want you to see how it goes. Report back to us. We want to see your productivity. We want to see what you're doing, the issues you have. No, everybody's like, work at home, no questions asked. Whatever happens, happens, and then let's go back, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So one of the things I wanted to bring up was this Fibonacci chart because, you know, if you like lines, you kind of draw some lines on a chart with technical analysis. And this particular chart I thought was pretty interesting. Now, just to let you know, this chart was done at the close yesterday. Since then, we've surpassed the level. But if you look at this, which is a daily chart of the price action of the S&P 500, this chart is available on the show notes for episode number 501. Yep, 501. Over on dhunplugged.com. So if you look at this, you draw the line, the top line at the high of any sequence. You go down to the low of that sequence. And then you get this automatic Fibonacci retracement numbers, the 23.6, the 38.2, the 50, 61.8, all that.
What do you mean automatic? How does this, is there a program you use to do this?
Yeah, I have a program. I could calculate it if I had to, but the program.
No, you don't want to if you can program.
Yeah, click, done. Drag it to where you need it to be, and you're done. So what's interesting is that we got a smack on the 50% retracement. You know, within a couple of dollars, it's fine. It's whatever, right around there. But you see that, right? We came to the bottom.
Yeah, it's dynamite.
Came up, snapped off of it, came down. Today we blew through there a little bit. I would think that there is some leeway if you look at all these other lines. It's usually a little bit above, a little bit below. But this tracked relatively well, you know, kind of where you would think on the first drop down, we saw that big move. Now, you don't know where that extension is going to be. That's a different tool. How far are you going to go down, right? But if you wanted to say, well, 2,100 is your target on the downside, or 2,200, whatever it is, you could draw it in advance. But I thought this was pretty interesting.
Before you go on, I have that question about this. First of all, you have your first two Fibonacci layers. As the thing goes down, it goes down and hits layer number two and then bounces back to layer number one. In other words, the green and bounces back to the turquoise.
Right, I see that. Yep. Mm-hmm.
So then it goes and it looks like it just passes through layer three. Or is that little bump there mean anything?
That bump and, to the right a little bit, you mean? That
looks like the there? One on the red
No, this
line.
This is a line drawing, so it could have.
Okay, then it goes. Now it just plows
right
down to the lower, the second from the bottom line, where it kind of like hesitates before it hits the bottom, and then it hesitates on that second to the bottom again on the way back up.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, in other words, is it hit? Does it hit normally? Because you look at these Fibonacci things,
right.
I rarely do.
Right.
Because I don't have that program. I'd probably get hooked on it if I did. But let's say, is there something about the top lines and the bottom lines? Because it seems as though going down, these top lines seem to be important, but then the lower ones weren't important. And then as it goes back up, the bottom ones seem important. Does that mean anything?
I think those levels, you know, you start to get extreme. So let me take one other point here. What you would do is, you see the 61.8% that first time it hit there and then bounced up?
Yeah.
You would take a tool called, this is a retracement tool. You'd use an extension tool. Now we would say, okay, that's the range because we don't know anything what's happening in the future at this point, right? What we would do is take the next tool and say, okay, let's establish if that was the 61.8%, what would it look like all the way down? Where would we go to get the next levels? Does that make sense?
Okay.
You can draw it moving forward theoretically. So now if you had that on your chart and you did that and you saw the first two that hit pretty well, you know, once you get back to that support level of 61.8, you know you're going to start seeing a move down the other direction if you are expecting a downtrend. So kind of, you know, that 2805 level where it, or 2800 level where it stopped the last time, the first bump down on the 2805 level. You would say, okay, well, that's where a support is, and that's where they started buying again. It failed, and it started moving down, and it really started sloping down very strong. It stopped again, right? So it's kind of like the first couple. The 50%, I think, is an interesting level. The first level, the 76 and the 23, not so much, but the center ones are more important. But it all depends on what you want to look at. You know, at the end of the day, it's all these freaking lines that you're drawing. Who knows?
It's interesting. I like this this analysis. People should definitely look at this chart.
Yep. This is a Fibonacci retracement, and then again, there's different ways to look at it. So with all this and with the markets moving up and seeing, I don't know, what are we at, 22 at least, even on the lower level of or the median level of where expectations are for the S&P 500 earnings to come in. We're about 22 times forward earnings at this point, which is absurd. With that in mind, JP Morgan comes out with their projections and update on GDP and unemployment. Now they're coming up with an unemployment level that will be 20%. GDP could fall 40%. That's on a quarter over quarter basis. So next quarter. And looking for anywhere from about a 5 to an 8% drop in GDP, which would, by the way, be more than we saw in the financial crisis. So
yeah,
I don't exactly.
Which is what I would expect.
You shut down the economy.
Shut down the country.
What do you expect if it's all shut down, right?
Yeah.
So I don't really understand, and I can't really square this idea that stocks should just go up because, well, the Fed is putting money in, and there's all this stimulus that's out there by the government, and I mean, you kind of go through the list, and you're like, okay, that's good. I see that for an initial pop, but.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you. I can't see it sustaining. Did you see the Matt Taibbi piece?
No. What did he write
this
time?
Did I send you a copy of this? No.
From Vanity Fair? Is he still working for them?
I don't know where it ran. I'm on his mailing list, so I got a copy of it from him directly. But it goes after the stock buybacks.
Yeah. And what did he say?
Well, he thinks it's the biggest scandal in history.
It is.
But...
I mean, I like it. It takes the markets higher, but
I didn't send it to you to read because it's really quite entertaining.
Yeah, I'll take a look at it. He's famous for the vampire squid article back in the days of Goldman Sachs when they were tanking in the financial crisis, talking about they were the big part of this.
He somehow has become a de facto financial reporter of the highest order, even though I've talked to the guy. It doesn't ever seem like it's something he really wants to do.
Yeah,
but he's so good at it,
right?
Because he's basically flabbergasted by everything that goes on and says, oh, isn't anyone noticing this?
Right. That's exactly what it is.
He's very noticing it.
Yeah. He's a very laid back dude. So now with this backdrop of a 5 to 8% drop in GDP and a 40% drop in GDP. And okay. So now we're getting all these analysts saying, you know what? Now the worst is behind us. I don't know how they figure this. But Goldman Sachs, the strategist David Costin says, hey,
how's the worst behind us? We haven't seen the domino effect yet of mortgages not getting paid.
I don't know.
Real estate companies going out of business, REITs failing, people not getting back to work, little companies folding, leaving people holding the bag. I mean, how's it the worst behind us?
It seems to me
that the worst is ahead of us.
There's a lot of worse ahead of us, but. They're really talking about the markets, so they think the markets are forward-looking, and therefore his near-term downside that he projected at 2,000, that was level for the S&P 500, no longer likely.
They're not forward-looking before a crash.
Well, but theoretically, the crash comes months ahead of the reality. That's what they're saying.
Well,
I mean, you're splitting hairs here, but you also have a lot of excess exuberance right now. And again, the Fed pumping all sorts of money in and supporting municipal bonds and junk bonds and treasuries and money markets and loans. And I mean, that's kind of helping calm markets down a little bit. But listen to this. Their year-end target on the S&P is now 3,000, which is about 6 or 7% from where we are now. So all these talking heads are starting to adjust because the market's moving up, right? They are all in a panic and all in a flutter when the markets are moving down with all their downside projections. They thought it would be 2,000. Now, if in fact we do finish the year at 3,000, which, you know what, anything's possible, it'd be pretty amazing that this entire event was contained to a month and a half of markets dropping. Wouldn't that seem a little bit absurd?
It would be quite the thing to witness.
Yeah, and the only thing you could say is that, you know, hey, the good news was that the markets were saved by the fiscal and monetary policy, but then you have to wonder and scratch your head, how many years is it going to take us to get out from under all this excessive spending? Not only do we have $2.2 trillion that was put into the system to save jobs and to protect companies and to bail out airlines and to bail out all sorts of companies, but now there's another $500 billion they're talking about and a possible phase four. Phase five. So
yeah,
so,
I know. I keep hearing about phase five.
Yeah, the phase. They started doing that on a whim one day, the idea of the tariffs with the phases with the tariffs, and like, hey, markets like this idea that we keep on putting a carrot out. That's what they should call it: the carrot one, carrot two, carrot three, instead of phases. It's carrot five coming. So. The idea that I think is really starting to spark some interest in the markets is two things. I think the sense that some of the numbers of new hospitalizations, new infection rate, they talk about how it's starting to flatten out, but we added like 100,000 today. Let's take a look at what we add. I think we were right at 500,000 on Friday, actually. Friday, we're at 500,000. And then, let's see. Is this it? Maps and trends. Oh, come on. All right, so the world map. Let's see. So we had 500,000 in the U.S. on Friday. There's almost 2 million, and now there's 108,000 since Friday. So we're talking about 3 days, 35, 40,000 a day. I don't know how that's necessarily getting better.
Well, you know, you can say whatever you want.
Well, I guess so. But, I mean, it is coming down a little bit and some of the spiking is going down. But still, there's a lot of problems related to this. Well, now the whole idea is not only are we seeing a little bit of a flattening of the increase, but on top of that, what's interesting is that the idea that we may start to see the country or at least states or counties or areas starting to reopen again. And now there's a big discussion about, well, who's gonna be the one to say, okay, we're open again? And what is that going to look like? So the governors were the ones that were responsible for their states, right? Wasn't that the case?
It seems so. They're the ones that shut the states down.
Right. And then President Trump is now saying that he has the authority to open up the country.
It doesn't seem likely.
Doesn't seem likely. So I don't know why there's always such confusion with this group. Why they have to make such problems? I mean, is it that he didn't want to be the one to put the country into a coma, but he wants to be the one to open it back up and take all the accolades for it? Is that what it is? Or is it they don't know what they're doing, so they just say anything they want? But every step of the way, there's just so much goddamn confusion with this gang. What's the deal?
Well, it's a first-time thing, so, you know, the first time you do something and get a screw-up like this, it's just it happens to everybody in their business and personal life and everything else. I shouldn't have said that, you say, somebody, the next thing you know. I just think it's just I don't think anyone's getting – well, I think the guidance might be a problem because the, whatever the federal guidance is, it's changed. It's kind of rewritten by the media, and the media, they like that. They like the eyeballs. And so they're trying to keep this thing going as horrible as they can to scare and frighten the public, which I think is sickening. And so they put out false information. There's a lot of people that I think the media has a lot to do with the confusion because they just lie.
Yes, I do agree with that, but it does seem to me that there are certain protocols that why do we even bother trying to override them? The governors have the power and the authority and the rights, and they're the ones that we're going to have to go to on the state level. That's the bottom line here, right?
Yeah, not every governor shut down their state either.
Right, that's correct. That's correct.
Arkansas is wide open. Yep. Wyoming's open.
Right. So I think that right now, what is California just, I think LA maybe, or California entirely pushed it out. Actually, I have some really interesting things that your governor said today. But they're pushing out to May 15th. I can't imagine we're going to open up. Well, first of all, opening up has different meanings to different people. There is no way that this is going to be a simple light switch, turn on and open up. And I relate this because I want to tell you this because if there's an expectation, this ties right back to what we're talking about. If there's an expectation that we're going to open up and restaurants are going to be full, bars are going to be full, people will be traveling, and there's going to be just, you know, hotel occupancy is going to be up, and it's just going to be an all-out party because people have been cooped up for a while, I just don't think so.
No, it's not. Of course it won't happen because people are skittish.
Yeah.
You can open it up, but you're not going to get, you know, you're not going to see the Warriors game.
Now, not only that, I want you to take, I wrote this in a piece today that I'm putting out about the vicious cycle that's going on with regard to how this is all going to look and work. Even if we open up restaurants, just let's take one restaurant, for example, okay? And let's assume for a moment that there's going to be a lot of people that want to go to that restaurant. Let's just say there's a grouping of people that want to go there. Okay, let's just set the stage. That restaurant is not going to have tables as close as they were before. Would you agree with that?
I think that's going to be almost by edict.
Right. That being the case, the table space per square foot will be down, therefore calculating into a lower amount of revenue per square foot of the restaurant. So far,
yes,
so good?
Okay. Probably by at least half.
Okay. That means that less people really have to be working in that restaurant. Therefore, more people will be continuing to be out of work for a while. Those people that were out of work or out of work at this current time will be less likely to be spending money on discretionary items, and therefore there'll be less money going into the economy. Less money going into the economy means that there'll be less spending, let's just say, at the Gap or pick your board.
And Amazon.
Right, and Amazon, wherever you want to look, right? Less spending at Amazon and at the Gap and all over results in those stores having less requirement for people to be working there, thereby having a higher unemployment rate, thereby continue on
making
this discussion, right?
Yeah, so, everything makes it worse.
Yeah.
So and there's nothing that you can figure out that makes it better. Nothing makes it better. Everything makes it worse.
There is one thing. There's one thing. Well, there's two things maybe.
Well, the only thing that makes it better is the price of gasoline
vaccine,
in some states.
A vaccine. A vaccine solves this problem. Right?
A vaccine. There's no vaccine on the horizon.
Right. But if there was a vaccine, that would be the solution. The second thing would be some kind of quick testing that could be utilized so that this sounds really kind of crazy. But when you go into the restaurant, everybody's, you know, you have to believe that everybody that is working there is tested and anybody that walks in there has tested negative.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's very easy to deal with. You just put a yellow star on their shirt
nice.
Or costume.
Yeah, Jews aren't going to like that.
Six-pointed yellow star.
Yeah, not happening.
That would say
no
coronavirus free.
Yeah. By the way, I went one of my first takeouts recently over the weekend. I said, there's a place right around the corner. Let me walk there and I'll grab some stuff. I called him up. I ordered. I said, listen, how do I get it? He says, just come in. We're wearing masks. We're good. I'm like, okay. So I go in. I'm donning my mask. I got my gloves. I look like a crazy man. And I'm like, I walk to the back to where they're cooking and stuff. I'm like, hey, excuse me. You guys aren't wearing masks. What's that about? You know? Oh, we just took them off for a second. I'm like, oh, what do you mean you took them off for a second? What does that mean, right? Then I walk up to the front and they have a whole major selection of beers. I'm like, listen, I'd like this kind of beer, whatever. He walks over to the fridge, opens it up, and barehanded takes out a beer and go, hey, try this one. I'm like, you know what? I'll take the one behind it. So I took the one behind it. I go up to the counter. What does he do? Picks up my beer with his bare hand again, and he rings it up. I said, dude, what are you picking up? What are you doing? You told me you have a mask on and gloves on and stuff, and you're touching my beer and you don't have a mask on. Really pissed me off. So
apparently.
Yeah. So I went back to the fridge. I took the third one in the back and then walked out there gingerly. Anyway, Amazon hiring 100,000 workers to make sure shipping and goods ordered get out the door. And that kind of helped the sentiment early this week that maybe things are better than they expect them to be. So that's pretty good. Although, and tonight there was an article that they're cutting. What was it now? They're cutting the third-party commissions significantly.
Yeah, like, here's your opportunity to gouge the independent vendors.
Yeah, so I think there was something like, I saw something about furniture that has like an 8% commission on it to chop it down to 3%.
Oh, what? People should just stop doing business with them.
Mm-hmm. That was, I thought, pretty ugly. You remember last week I was questioning this whole idea of why is the water so clear when I'm out fishing? So clean. And I was wondering.
Yes, you were fascinated by this clear water, which is, by the way, surrounds Bermuda if you've ever been there.
It wasn't that clear, but it was much clearer than it was in the past, right? So I got an email from Sean D. And he says, I'm excited to be able to provide you answers from Tuesday's show. You brought up water clarity in the intercoastal, inlet, and nearshore waters. I'm an environmental scientist for South Florida Water Management. Florida is now in a bit of a drought. South Florida and northern Everglades have received much less rain than normal times this year. And Lake Okeechobee, and the levels are really starting to drop. And when you take the levels, when the level lake level drops, the Army Corps of Engineers slows or completely stops lake releases. So our water clarity is related to the amount of freshwater runoff either locally or in localized rainfall or lake discharge. No rain, no freshwater runoff, low level lakes, no discharges gives us clear water. There you go.
Well, problem mystery solved.
Mystery solved. There you go.
It's a good business.
What else is going on? Unemployment benefits, some updates here. So the first stimulus checks, I've been hearing from people that the $1,200, they're getting them. They're starting to get
I've never heard of anyone who's gotten one.
Yep. I have a couple people that I know that got them. So probably going to be a wait for others that haven't either filed electronically with a refund that was due them, so they have a bank account number on the return, or you moved. They don't have the address. The PPP program is still in a bit of a logjam. I've heard, and somebody told me on Twitter today, that the PPP program, somebody actually got, but there's still a major logjam in the payroll protection program. EIDL grant program, which was a who knows for a few days and for a few weeks, not a peep out of the SBA. Update, checks are starting to go out with changes. If you remember, Mnuchin was up there talking about how everybody's going to get $10,000 on a first-come, first-served basis. Remember that?
Yeah.
Nope. Now it's changed. I don't know how they do this, by the way. I find it fascinating how they write a law, they tell you what it is, and then somehow it changes. Now it's $10,000 per enterprise, up to $10,000 per enterprise based on your number of employees. $1,000 per employee. Up to $10,000.
Well, there goes the free money.
Yeah. So, for example, I have two employees. I get $2,000. New money's been requested by the Treasury, which was voted down. $250 billion to add to the payroll protection program. And Democrats want more money for hospitals and states. What was really striking to me, though, was not that. Okay, fine. I'll go along with more money for hospitals and states to dig them out of this mess, right? That's fine. You have any problem with that?
Well, depends. But well, no, I can live with it.
Aside from the fact it's a boatload of money, right? But what they're all, I saw two different Democrats I think one was a senator, I think, and one was a House member, that they talked about they want more money for minority business, women-owned business, and that whole other cadre of businesses. I was like, what? What? How is that working? Why should minority businesses, let's say you have a business with five employees. One's a minority business, one's not a minority business. Why should the minority business get more money? Does that make any sense?
No.
And what about woman-owned?
That's just a bribe.
What about the women-owned businesses? What's that about?
Makes no sense at all.
I mean, why don't men-owned businesses get a benefit, a bump? Seriously, I don't understand. Why do they come up with this crap?
To appease their voter base and get them to vote Democrat. Man. Look what we did for you. The Democrats have given up on a lot of they've given up on the white male. They've given up on a lot of voter bases, and they're probably going to lose a couple of them in the meantime. They got a lot of problems.
I usually wouldn't be upset about this. I'm like, okay, you know what? Maybe some people deserve more than I do, this and that, or whatever. But I'm getting kind of like done with this. Seriously, I'm done with this whole women-owned thing, this special treatment. You know what? They have plenty of businesses that are women-owned. I have seen several advertising firms recently that are all women. It's clear. That you look on the websites, all women. You know, if you had an all-male, and by the way, and they promote it that way. You follow what I mean?
Yeah, they do. They promote it that way. If you we're all women.
Yeah. Can you imagine if we're like, hey, you know, DH Unplugged, an all-male podcast. We specialize in male topics only. People be like, oh my God, that's terrible. Ridiculous. Bacon. I was mentioning Smithfield Foods. It's going to be closed down in Sioux Falls. Tesla succumbs. Tesla will cut pay for all of its salaried employees and will furlough hourly workers until May 4th when it intends to resume production of electric cars. And there's going to be a pay reduction will be in place until the end of the second quarter. So let's think about that. End of the second quarter. When is that? June. No? Yeah. June, right?
Yeah.
So the reopening in May, but the pay cuts are until the end of the second quarter. So that means that people have to work. How does that work?
Sounds scammish.
So they're also withdrawing guidance for 2020, and although it should comfortably exceed the 500,000 vehicle deliveries for this year. Oh, whatever. WebEx and Zoom and other kinds of talking, viewing. Did you do like a WebEx Easter or anything?
No.
Yeah, we did like a WebEx or a Zoom Passover. It was weird. We didn't do the whole thing. We just kind of, you know, got on there and talked. But Cisco's video conferencing app, WebEx, registered a record 324 million attendees in March, with users more than doubling in the Americas as the coronavirus-led lockdowns forced businesses to have employees work from home. Zoom daily users ballooned to more than 200 million in March than previous maximum that they reported of 10 million.
Yeah, it's way up there. And the greatest thing about Zoom is all the Zoom bombers.
Yeah, well, that's kind of funny. I mean, I think they fixed some of that. Some people had mentioned to me I use Zoom a lot that we shouldn't use Zoom. But I'm like, we use webinars. And I don't, unless somehow Zoom is maybe giving email information or what the email address away to somebody else. But other than that, what else can they steal? I don't really understand what they can steal from us.
Well, it's not the matter of stealing. It's a matter of coming on the Zoom thing and stripping naked.
Well, I understand that. That's a Zoom meeting. If you don't have a password, you're susceptible to that. But I do Zoom webinars, and that's it's a different kind of product. It's a one-to-many product. So nobody else is allowed to have audio on or video on unless I allow it. There's settings to not allow for chat between participants, only to attendees to panelists, panelists to attendees. So anyway, but Zoom is getting a lot of heat. I mean, you gotta wonder if there is an undertone of maybe a PR thing going on that's trying to really wreck them. Alphabet, Google last week banned Zoom from its employers' laptops, citing security concerns.
I thought everybody at Google used a Chromebook.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I guess you can use that. Now, we were talking about that the end or the lows are in, right? You know, it's all peaches and candy from here. Well, Mark Hulbert says the lows are not in. This is a guy that studies the markets. That's what he does. He studies history, writes about it quite often. And he came up with the fact that there's 11 bear markets in the Ned Davis calendar in which the Dow fell more than 37% from like where it occurred from February 2020 high to the March low. And on average of those 11, historically, the final bear market came 137 days later after registering such a loss. So if we add the average to the day of the March low, we come up with a projection low again of August 7th. That plays right with our chart that we put together.
The one from the last show.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I've been passing that chart around quite a bit.
Oh, there you go.
I think it makes a lot of sense. Hey, well, you think blah, 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 blah. I said, look, boom. This is the chart that we like.
Yeah. That does make a lot of sense to me, at least. Like I said,
it makes sense to me, too.
Yeah. And we started to see some of the bank earnings come out today. So the first line of earnings that are starting to sneak into the time period when this whole virus thing is going on are starting to happen. Now, one of the things we do know that companies are going to show pretty horrendous numbers and probably pull their guidance because they don't know what it's going to be. So JP Morgan and Wells Fargo reported this morning. We saw the usual spike in the pre-markets that we see every single time the banks report. Everybody's like excited about something. It's like they're excited that they're reporting. You know, that's kind of like the reaction. Oh,
well, that means somebody's not dead.
Yeah, they're still in business. Let's bid them up. So Wells Fargo was up even though they missed. And JP Morgan was up even though they missed. But one of the biggest missed pretty badly too. One of the, as President Trump would say, they missed strongly. But with JP Morgan said the bank's net income declined 29% year over year. But more importantly, what I thought was really stuck out to me was the addition of the reserves that they had to put aside, $6.8 billion, to lock in provisions for credit losses. So they put another 6.8 aside on top of what they had. They're up to $8.3 billion for set-asides for credit losses that could come from mortgage non-payments or credit card defaults or loan defaults. That's just them. Up 454% year over year.
Wow.
So that's a big issue. You know, that's
kidding.
We're not talking about little money. I mean, I know billions doesn't seem like a big number anymore. But, you know, if you think about what was that whale trade? They lost like $5 billion on the whale trade that totally blew out their stock a few years back.
Yeah, I remember that.
So now with that, there's a, you know, with what's going on and the outlook, there's a new term that's being thrown around. So let's see. We had the Great Depression. We had the financial collapse. What was it called back then?
It's called with the 2008.
Yeah.
We had the dot-com collapse.
Yeah. The dot-com bust.
And then that was the Great Recession in 2008.
The Great Recession, but they also called it the financial crisis they called it too.
Oh, financial crisis. Yeah. That was, so, yeah.
Financial crisis. Now this is called the Great Lockdown Recession. That's what they're starting to throw out. Great lockdown recession.
Fair. It's not jazzy.
The IMF is saying it's the worst downturn since the Great Recession. Of course, that's duh. Duh. Right? I mean.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious.
Okay. Global growth to shrink at least 3%. Emerging economies expect to see a few quarters of their losses or GDP down by about 33%. There's a table that I grabbed today about the IMF's outlook. And it goes through the various countries, inclusive of the entire world. Somehow China is going to skate through and not go into a recession. I shouldn't say that. Let me back up. They are going to be in a recession, but they're going to be a positive GDP for the year. So they may have multiple quarters of back-to-back declines, But in total, the expectation is to have a 1.2% GDP for 2020 and back up to a 9.2% for 2021. United States
India down. Also looks pretty good.
India, yeah. But again, and you have
Brazil.
To remember, you have to remember those emerging markets that when you look at their previous numbers are, you know, in the 8, 9, 10% range. But yeah, I agree. They're also expecting, look at, Brazil, but look at Brazil. They could have a 5.3, but only a 2.9 in 2021. Mm. So, but the big ones, you know, look at, for example, I mean, Canada down 6.2%. Where is Italy's down 9.1, Russia down 5, South Africa. Is Australia on here? No, I guess not. Japan 5.2. But look at the 2021. The recovery is weak. Now, you may say, well, what do you mean? 2021, the United States is 4.7%. That's a good number. That is a good number. But coming off a negative 6%, it's not a good number. So a couple of years.
This is another interesting chart people should look at. You can look at this and go, huh, this is interesting.
All right, quickly through a few things. SoftBank is on track for its worst annual performance in its 39-year history.
Yeah.
Now, we called this a long time ago as we looked at their really poor decision-making with WeWork and other companies.
Well, poor decision-making, and they're also playing a lot of financial games. They've always done that.
They're going to lose about $17 billion in its Vision Fund alone.
Yeah.
It means the losses, the investment losses mean that $100 billion fund, what was the point of that? I didn't finish that sentence there.
A lot of these funds are, I think it's going to be the case with a lot of investment. These guys are put together funds, these speculative funds that are venture capitalists. Play that game.
Yeah, and what they do is they get sovereign wealth that goes in there, and they get all sorts of other money that gets kind of, you know, pushed in, and they have a feeling that what's the difference? I'll just do what I can, and if I don't do well, I'll just close it and open up another fund. Balls to the
walls. Yeah, well, you can't do that forever. The sovereign fund guys are getting pretty picky about where they're putting their money.
Yep. But they have
to take a beating on one of these funds like this, and you kind of go out of vogue.
In this fund, besides WeWork, there was Uber. There was a whole bunch of other ones. They just wrote off an entire investment just a couple of days ago. California's numbers. Somebody with some thought process. Good for Newsom. He said there's 6 indicators for modifying the stay-at-home order. He wants to see 6 things. And I was looking at these. I'm like, wow, those are pretty intense, by the way. So the first thing is the ability to monitor and to protect our communities through testing. Contact tracing, isolating, and supporting those who are positive or exposed. Number 2, the ability to prevent infection in people who are at risk for more severe COVID-19. I don't know how you do that. Number 3, the ability of the hospital and health systems to handle surges. Okay. Number 4, the ability to develop therapeutics to meet the demand. Again, that's kind of a far-out thing, isn't it?
Well, therapeutics means, is there any drugs that work better than what we're using?
I understand that, but my point is, if we're trying to open up on May 1st, how do we do all this by then?
Well, they've actually been doing a lot of work on therapeutics, so I think that's most of the energy has been going.
The next thing is the ability for businesses, schools, and childcare facilities to support physical distancing. And finally, the ability to determine when to reinstitute certain measures, such as the stay-at-home order, if necessary. So that's a pretty well-thought-out situation, but it doesn't look like you're opening up anytime soon.
Well, there are some things that could be done. For example, with schools, which they've already gotten to the point where they can do telecommuting, you could have like half the class go in one day separated, and then the rest of the kids watch from home, and then the other kids go the next day. I mean, they can get pretty creative.
Wasn't half the fun just hanging out outside smoking cigarettes with your friends at the schoolyard?
I never smoked.
All right. Well, in theory.
I think, a lot of the fun was in recess.
Right.
Well, they don't think school should be fun.
This whole thing sucks. Now, do you remember last week I was telling you about my hands?
Your hams?
My hands.
Oh, yeah, your hands. You used a neoprene latex.
Yeah, latex. They're getting better now.
And your hands swole up. Did you get another letter from a listener?
I did. How do you know that? You heard the jingling?
It's a theme.
Yep. Hello, Andrew. I hope this finds you doing well. By the way, on No Agenda, which you can listen to on Thursdays at 12 p.m. live streaming with Adam Curry and John C. Dvorak, and on Sundays at the same time, 12 o'clock, I encourage you to do so. A fabulous show. No Agenda, you go to, what is it, noagendastream.com, and you'll just type in No Agenda, you'll find it. Do you read a lot of letters on there, right? Do you get a lot of real letters?
As opposed to what letters?
Like emails. Do you get, you know, versus you're reading emails.
Actually, we do get a lot of real letters. Emails obviously 10 to 1, but we get a good amount of real letters. Yes, and I make a point of this. I've encouraged people to write in longhand and people start to think about it. And there are some people that have beautiful handwriting and there's other people who can't read it. We get a lot of real letters. I think it's the way to go.
So I got a lovely letter on lovely stationery from a company. Hello, Andrew. I hope this finds you doing well. Enclosed, you'll find samples of our 100% pure certified organic jojoba. One is for you and the other one is for your wife. I've also enclosed a brochure about the jojoba for you to learn more. Start with a drop on the back of your hand. You could use it from head to toe, even on your face. It's great for after sun care as well. I've been a longtime listener to DH Unplugged and I enjoy the information. Please accept this as a small token of my appreciation. Shoot me an email. Let me know what you think once you have had a chance to try it. All the best, Brian Morris, president of the Jojoba Company at Jojoba, which is JOJOBACOMPANY.com. So I tried this stuff. It's like an oil. It looks like vegetable oil, to be honest with you. I put it on. It's like oil. I mean, it sits on your hands. It's very glistening at first, and then it just goes right into your hands and it makes it very soft. I wonder if I could use this actually for cooking.
No,
I'm saying.
Can't cook with jojoba.
But it is nice for skin, scalp, and hair. I wonder if I put it in my hair, what's going to happen with it? Will it get greasy?
I don't know. Try it.
Yeah. Smells nice. Not. Let me smell it. Open it up. Not much of a smell, actually. It smells a little nutty. Like me. But anyway, thank you. Thank you, Brian, for sending that. I really appreciate that. I did try it. Pretty good stuff. It's a very, what's the word? Enriching of the skin.
Good.
Yep. We do have the DH Unplugged close to the pin for Costco running right now. And that's doing pretty well. We have a lot of listeners that
it's doing well, but my guess isn't doing very well.
You're off by 1.8% now. Got a nice shot up in the upside. You're 308. The current price is
314. Oh, it did go back up.
Yeah, I was off by 0.46% yesterday. Now I'm off by 5%.
Well, I was looking at this action and I said, this thing is going in the wrong direction. And my wife analyzed my thoughts on this because I go to Costco but if I see a line like they have around here, the line is like a mile long. I'm not going.
Yeah.
I'm just not going. There's plenty of places I can go buy stuff and, I'm not getting a good deal at Costco, and now they've jacked the prices up, I understand. So you're not going to, you know, it's not something you steal. I mean, I'm sure the chicken is still a good deal, $5 chicken. But she says to me, well, there you go. That's why the stock was going down. You're not even going, and you have to be one of many. Mm-hmm. And I thought about it. I have missed at least three Costco visits where I spend on average way too much money.
Yep.
$200 is usually the minimum, but it's usually around two. It's always about the same, about $250. And look what I buy. You buy a lot of food and stuff. So they lost $750 on me, or $775, whatever it is. I'm sure I'm not the only one.
No, you're not.
They're not getting their numbers.
You're the man on the street, man. You're the man on the street. You're the average Joe. Which, speaking of which, Joe Biden for president.
Yeah, go, Joe, go.
All right, we're going to skip over a few things here. Of course, you could donate if you want. I'm not going to go through that today.
Yeah, you should donate because this show is important during this period.
It is. It's very important.
Yeah, if you haven't donated, please donate. You should donate.
Yeah, it's on the bottom of dhunplugged.com. You find the little yellow button, so it's pretty important. But let me go through a couple of things. We got some questions directed to you that I asked people to submit on Twitter.
I saw that on Twitter.
Yeah. Did you see the video I put up?
No.
Oh, I put up a video. I got the whole studio. I did a promo for tonight's show.
Oh, I missed that part.
As a matter of fact, you should look at that because that promo is all set up to go Twitter live. The way that it's set up, because you're not going to be live unless you have a camera or something. I got some pictures of you that there and a camera on me.
Oh, okay.
So the first question is, please ask John if he can give us his stock buy, his stock buying trading strategy he learned in college and is and seems to be still using today.
No, I'm not using that anymore. I stopped using that trading technique in the mid-70s.
All right.
But that was all I based most of my trading, but it was in the period of time where you could do this. Things change and you have to change your strategy.
Yep.
My current strategy is mostly looking at insiders and what they're up to and trying to analyze it. But it was mostly penny stocks at the time, which was a very easy thing to make money on. And I had a stockbroker because when they you could actually have a guy that you could work with that was an old fart. And he was a genius at penny stocks and we worked together. And yeah, I pretty much put myself through college trading stocks. Hmm. I mean, I worked a lot in summers too, so I was always making a lot of money. But I traded a lot of these stocks and it worked out until at one point when the market just decided, no, that's not going to work anymore. And I actually took a beating for a while before I got a clue.
Hmm.
Yeah. So I know I haven't done anything like that.
Next question is, how is the train count or is it still not running?
Still not running.
Hmm.
But I will say this, there is a coastal train, the coastal that goes from Los Angeles to Seattle, and which is a big, big Amtrak train. It's a beauty. And they generally have 12 cars because I count the cars. And the last time I saw it coming back from Seattle, it had six, which is really, I've never seen anything quite like this. So I would assume the Zephyr, if it was running, would be down to five.
ITM in the morning, recession coming or can it be prevented?
Well, Andrew's better at answering that.
I think it's pretty apparent from what we've talked about.
I agree.
We're in it. It's not coming. We're in it.
Yeah, we're in one. Yeah.
By the way, you know how you know when there's a recession right now? Because everything's closed.
Everything's closed and there's no cars on the road.
Very simple. Very simple. Everything's closed. Yes, that's a recession. There's a question, can we actually afford the shutdown and how long can the recession take before someone will mention the R word? Well, it's there. Okay. We got a couple of seconds left for some limericks. We can bang out two of them if you want.
All right, let's do it.
Jennifer Chang writes in. I feel like I've read this before. I don't know why. But here we go. The stimulus bill we must sign. Says Trump the bailout's his design. Pelosi gave in. Americans win. The provisions Congress to refine.
It had potential. I think a couple of punch, you know, two word lines kind of sped it up a little bit. So the pacing wasn't good, but I'll give her a B.
Okay.
The rhymes were good.
Dylan writes in, he says, or his limerick is, it's getting hotter under Trump's collar. Back to work, he wants to holler. The Fed will buy anything to help lessen the sting, even if it destroys our dollar. A lot of words there. There's a lot of words.
Well, that was one of those where he just couldn't quite nail it. It was like, I'm almost there. I'm almost going to nail it. And then it kind of falls apart and it becomes kind of mediocre, to be honest about it. I would give it a C plus.
All right. And the last one is from Gary Henneberry. In college, when the poetry should be mastered, I was too busy getting plastered. So John gave me a break, raised my grade for God's sake. Don't be a grumpy old wonderful person.
Yeah, that's one of these. It's not an official limerick because he didn't use the word. I think it's bastard he wanted to throw in there.
We could put that in there.
And, you know, it's cute. It's cute. I'll give him a B.
Okay. And that's going to end the section on the limericks. This is a game that we play. It's not a solicitation to buy or sell any security. It's not a recommendation of any kind. Nothing on the show should be considered investment advice or a recommendation. If you choose to invest in any of the stocks mentioned, you should know that it may carry risk.
along with the risk of a loss of principal. You should also seek out professional financial advice for your particular situation. We assume no risk, as these are not to be considered recommendations. Horowitz Company, myself, or John C. Dvorak may invest in any of the securities mentioned, and we'll disclose that on the website under the weekly stock picks section. You can go to dhunplugged.com and see all the names we discuss in the segment, along with the performance information from the date discussed, as well as any additional important disclosures.
So, things are looking good for some of the names.
We would have had all green. We'd nail this, except one of us, yeah. Two of us, decided to keep playing with fire.
In the damn short.
Playing with matches.
Yep, I'm gonna make it on that one. I'm telling you.
This was you, and what I'm doing is I'm pointing at you for shorting Facebook.
Yep. So I shouldn't throw in the shorting of Tesla this evening. Tesla, I just think, is just way overdone.
But that's another. It was similar. This is all in the same group of nutcase owned stocks. I would say Netflix, Tesla, Amazon, Facebook. There's probably a couple more. I know you love playing with them, but I don't know. Maybe it might work. I mean, if the thing ever cracks, if Tesla ever actually breaks down and the shorts start making money. Could happen.
I mean, they've done it before, but the thing is,
shot is not going to hurt.
Yeah, right now it's still running on the fumes of excess of exuberance. I mean, if the markets do come down, I mean, I'm not talking about a one day situation, but markets come down. I mean, Tesla's going to take a beating. You got to take the money out of that. It can't hold up. And I think when the reality of a recession comes in, with the fact that this extended slowdown or shutdown, I just can't imagine. I mean, have you seen the other car companies? You know, I mean, Tesla is a car company. Let's get something straight. You could say all you want that it's a technology company. Yes. It's a technology company that develops cars. I mean, to a degree, Ford and GM are technology companies too. You mean, oh, no, because they're on gas. Just because they're on gas doesn't mean they're not technology, right?
Yeah.
But somehow, Ford and GM have been obliterated, cutting dividends, slowing down sales, but they're still selling multiples of what these guys sell, right? They have the biggest problem with and what Tesla doesn't have is that GM and Ford have major pension obligations. And as interest rates go down, their pension obligations for their defined benefit programs are off the charts. The funding of those pensions is crazy. And they have a lot of people that are still alive that are collecting from the old plans where they guaranteed a monthly income for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Tesla doesn't have that. That's a big issue. So that's good for Tesla. That still doesn't make up for the fact that they're still a car company. They're still a company that's selling something. And in recessions, those go down. Anyway, I don't have any other names for this week. Do you have any?
Yeah, I'm going to give this one a shot because a momentum play, it looks like somebody's up to something. It's got to do with one of the directors bought like $20 million worth of the stock, and it's MRSN, which makes me think they got something. It's because it's a COVID play. That's a COVID play.
Oh, Mersana. It's up. Let's see. What's up today? 3%. Okay. That's 20.
It's stalling near a run up. It had a run up, and it's like it's now sitting around kind of dicking around, but I think it could take off.
All right, we got it in there. All right, with that, we are right on time, right on the button, ending the show. So I'll see you again next week.
Okay, next Tuesday then.
Great. Bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.